And good morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It is Tolman's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Got a lot to react to as last night he had UFC 262. That was coming to you live from Houston, Texas. We have a new lightweight champion of the world as Charles Dubronx Oliveira put away Michael Chandler in the second round, knocked him out in the 19-second mark of round two. He gets the gold wrapped around his waist. Really, really cool moment for Charles, man. I mean, he just it was as pure of joy. I could just see a guy winning. Like, I was there live when Rose won a couple of weeks ago, and she was, you know, kind of beside herself, and obviously was crying. You could see she was overwhelmed with emotion and meaning. But it was also her second belt. You know, it was a huge comeback from her career to get the belt wrapped around her waist. With Charles, it was just like, you know, you think of a 20-year-old kid who has had a decade-long journey to get to this mountaintop, and you could just see how much that ride meant to him to get all the way to the top and beat Michael Chandler. And really what was a huge comeback for him, because it was not looking good in that first round. It was a big, you know, back and forth affair. Michael got him early with some good shots, really blasted him, cut him open early. And you saw Michael Chandler really pulled a move where he was going to go for the submission on an absolute boa constrictor in Charles Oliveira. So it was a bit of a gutsy move. I really thought that Michael Chandler, I think when he looks back on this fight, is going to have a couple of moments of regret. And you know, that's kind of what you love about him as a fighter. We had him on this week on the morning show, and you know, I had picked Charles Oliveira to win this fight, and simply a lot of what I thought what ended up happening was somewhat to the level of what I thought was going to happen. Like, I thought that just Michael Chandler's aggression was going to end up costing him, but it really, you know, it wasn't like he slipped up and ended up in a submission hold. That actually did almost happen in the first round, but this was more of a case of, I think Mike got a little bit too cocky with a couple of things. I thought they got a little bit too cocky with the end of that first round, and thought he got a little bit too cute, and then just, you know, kind of fell asleep at the wheel and got hit with a monster left hook that sat him on his butt. And you know, Charles kind of handled it all from there. But from the standpoint of, you know, maybe not going for that submission hold on Charles, knowing that that's going to put you in a bad spot, because you did sit him down so early and you did have that big advantage seemingly in the first round. And then also, I think him going to the end of the first round, you know, really trying to ride it out by going somewhere with ground and pound, I felt like he probably should have, and even DC said this at one point, maybe even let him back up because he could have finished the job. But look, that's all well and good to say right now, because the fight's over and Charles Oliveira is the one with the gold wrapped around his waist. He's an absolute savage, and you know, just it does seemingly look like, you know, at 31 years old, does seem look like he's getting better. Is handling adversity so well, and I feel good for him getting to this mountaintop. You know, I had problems with this being the championship fight from the standpoint of a guy like Michael Chandler having the opportunity to fight for the undisputed quote unquote lightweight championship, and not a guy like Dustin Poirier who had, you know, put so many blood, sweat, and tears, and they're basically making him pick a paycheck over the championship. But you feel better about a guy like Charles Oliveira at least ending the night with it wrapped around his waist, just because, you know, he had been in the division for so much longer. And it's not that Mike, you know, becoming champion is a bad thing, because, you know, and people know, and how much he's meant to the sport and how much he's put into Bellator and all that type of stuff. But it just wouldn't feel right. Like, it's like you have this division that's been full of killers, that's kind of in this weird era right now of new, like a little bit of a new era coming with Charles being on top, Dustin and Connor kind of fighting out who's going to get the shot at the belt next, Khabib being gone. It would have felt weird if the guy from Bellator, who one of the reasons he didn't come over was because, you know, this was kind of held up with the Khabib Connor show for so long, if he would just kind of waltz in and became champion. Listen, he almost did. He is certainly good enough. I just think it would have been a weird timeline. I think he'll be back. I think he's got the skill set. You know, but Iron Michael Chandler, listen, he's a wild man, and he goes in there and he tries to do some wild things, and you know, that's why he's been, you know, has also suffered some pretty brutal knockouts and knockout losses. But I do think he's going to look back on this fight and think about what could have been. And then on the other side of it, you look like a guy like Charles, doing all that he did not doing, being through everything that he had been through. It almost felt like it was like, oh man, all the stuff that he had gone through in his career to get to this point, he wasn't going to let it slip up. Like you let him off the hook at the end of that first round, it felt like, and that was a bad mistake. And for Charles, he gets to reap the benefits. He's now the king of this division, the real crown jewel division for a long time in the UFC. Huge for Brazil. I'm sure they're pumped up having, you know, Davidson Figueiredo and obviously having, you know, Amanda Nunes represent their country. But, you know, being back on top of a division like this has to be absolutely, absolutely huge to them. And it was a good night for Brazil, quite frankly, for a lot of factors. It really, really was. And you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, is Brazil done? Are the best days of Brazilian MMA behind us? Not after tonight, for sure. Not after tonight, for sure. So great for Charles Oliveira. And this is interesting, man, like how this is going to play out between, you know, him taking on the winner, Dustin and Connor. You know, he looks like he's just got so many tools to go into the toolbox, and Mike hits hard. You know, like, you know, if you're going to have the questions of what kind of power can he stand up, could he stand up to Connor's power? Look, he took on a powerful dude tonight, Michael Chandler, and looked like he was in a lot of danger. Maybe Connor thinks, oh, I can knock that guy dead. Maybe, but we haven't really seen that Connor magic in a long, long time. And then with Dustin, you know, Dustin's a little bit more, I think, savvy than Mike is. So if he has some of those problems on the feet, where Michael, I think, is a little bit of a one-hit bomber, Dustin really, really can go to war with guys and can really be crisp. And he does have all those skill sets. He's just, I think, a little bit more well-rounded of a fighter than Michael Chandler is. So I think that whoever comes out on top of this July fight, Charles Oliveira is going to have his hands full with a tough, tough challenge on, you know, who's going to be the man, who's going to be the guy who really challenges him for this belt and this division. And then, you know, you can look to guys like, you know, Justin Gaethje getting back in the mix and all that type of stuff as well. So huge, huge performance from him. And he just, the way he was hugging the belt was just so cool, because you just don't see that joy, man. You don't see that unbridled enthusiasm, especially because, you know, we look back at the last card and, you know, we saw two champs right now and Kamaru Usman and Valentina Shevchenko. They've been reigning for a while. Rose has been there before. You know, those moments, though, where you get that first belt, that first taste of wrapping the championship around your waist is special. It's special. And you really, those are the moments that you kind of live for as a fan, to see those guys complete their journey. And that's why they always say, like, you know, a lot of fighters will say when they're champion, it's tough to keep the hunger, to keep the reign going and keeping it going long, because it's never going to be quite as good as that first taste of having it wrapped around your waist. So it look, this is this guy, even though it's not exactly the fight I wanted to ring in the new UFC, I thought Dustin deserved that more than anybody else. You see how much it meant to a guy like Charles Oliveira, and he's a good guy to wear the crown right now. And obviously, it'll be settled. You know, I'd imagine it'll be settled by the end of the year. You know, well, if all health goes correctly, and we have Dustin and Connor taking each other on in a little bit's time in July, we'll have a champ right after that. So this is going to be a fun matchup for, I think, the fans, whoever comes out on top. I think, you know, Connor also having the former beef with Brazil, and Charles with versus Dustin, I just think it's kind of like the all world, the all winners club. Like those guys have just been so dominant in this lightweight division. I think that's as pure as it gets. You have Dustin, who's the best boxer on the planet, the best boxer mixed martial arts I think it has to offer on the planet, and then Charles, who's just really, I think, showed tonight, is, I don't want to say he has no weaknesses, because certainly he was in some very, very vulnerable spots, but just has the mental fortitude and the capability to keep going and to keep doing some great stuff. So from his standpoint, even with him facing that adversity, it just showed that he was able to weather it like a guy who had been in the UFC for a decade and been in some bad spots. And they were talking about, oh, what is he going to do? What is he going to do when this type is up? And can't respond much better than that, man. And we're talking about, you know, he was gashed open from this fight from basically the beginning. You know, Chandler busted him open, rocked him, and kind of ended up in a favorable position, because, you know, Michael Chandler was going for this guillotine, didn't go for it, you know, all the way. Didn't feel like he had a great spot in it, and ended up giving his back up to Charles Oliveira. That's obviously a terrible spot. And then you had to be impressed with the way Michael Chandler popped up, just like I was out of nothing, like out of nowhere. Because a lot of guys will kind of just ride those 3 minutes out, and he wasn't willing to do that. And then put Charles Oliveira in an even worse spot, because you got to feel like, oh, we're back on our feet, and all of a sudden we're in this very, very bad situation. But then after he got dropped again, I thought that's really where Chandler messed up. And Charles Oliveira made him pay dearly in that second round, and is now champ. As far as Chandler, like, where does he go from here? You know, I think there's a lot of good fights, you know, Michael versus Tony, Michael versus Justin Gaethje, you know, maybe Michael versus Beneil Dariush after tonight. We'll get into some of the Tony fight coming up and where things stand with Al Kakoui and where they stand with Beneil Dariush. But look, he's made a name for himself. I think he's certainly shown himself to be a marketable fighter. He's not a boring fighter by any means. So I think he can get right back in the mix. Him saying that he's going to be champion in 12 months, I think that's going to be tough, because obviously the winner of July's fight, I think, stands to go and fight for the belt. But nonetheless, a really, really great performance from Charles. And Mike was right there, man. Mike was right there. He had his chances. It's just that he got, I thought, a little too cute when he had this fight in a very good spot, teed up for him to go win it. We'll take a quick break. We'll get into the rest of UFC 262 on the other side. We're back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790. The Ticket recap in UFC 262 last night in Houston, Texas. I got to say, Texas did all right. A little bit more spoiled than the Jacksonville card. Now, granted, the Jacksonville card, I would say, was way better than this. Not only just from a lineup standpoint, but just from a finish standpoint. But I will say, I just thought that Jacksonville was just even more electric than what Houston brought to the table. Though Houston had its moments, they were hot for Tony Ferguson. They loved Tony. And obviously, that I think kind of probably swung with where things could have gone for the night, because we talked about what went down in the first fight, in the first segment. But the thing that's interesting about the co-main event is, you know, Tony kind of was going through all the traditional stuff of, hey, I got a new camp, brought in Freddie Roach. And by the way, listen, let me tell you just something. As a guy who, I love Freddie Roach, okay? Manny Pacquiao, Freddie Roach, those are my guys. I love Manny. Big respect for them and all that type of stuff. But this is what I got to say. You go and get the Freddie Roach thing, it's not always like the greatest. It's like the classic thing of a guy who just wants to fix him. Oh, and work with Freddie Roach. The Freddie Roach dynamic with Manny Pacquiao does not necessarily mean that pixie dust is going to just, you know, sprinkle onto you and it's going to be fantastic. Like, the last guy I think it worked out for was like Tyson Fury worked with Freddie Roach a little bit with when he had Ben Davidson as his trainer. Now he's got Sugar Hill Stewart and his training down here and all that type of stuff. But, you know, I don't always like go crazy. People always, it's like the Freddie Roach card is like the most overplayed. I gotta get a new car smell on my career, so I go to Freddie. Ben Askren even tried that. Like, he was getting ready for the Jake Paul. Oh, I'm working with Freddie Roach. So I just feel like that card is like one of the most overplayed in combat sports now, not just boxing, but now in combat sports. But you know, look, this was interesting from a couple of things with Tony, and you know, people want to say, hey, you know, give the credit to Beneil, and yeah, good for Beneil. He gets the shutout win. He wins 30-27 on all scorecards. Seems like a nice dude. Seems super, super likable. You know, is going to go and spend, you know, the time with his daughter and all that type of stuff. Great, great. Good for him. But it's tough not to have the focus of, hey, this is the guy everybody thought was going to be Khabib. This is the guy, the uncrowned champion. And now he's 0-3 and seems like he can't get the magic back. I think it goes to a couple of things. And I think DC actually made a really great point. It's just, you just never know when it feels like it's going to just completely slip downhill as far as age is concerned. And I really do feel like Justin Gaethje broke Tony Ferguson in a way that I don't know if he can get it back. You know, we just sometimes we see these fights and guys just aren't the same. You know, we always think in mixed martial arts that the guys can have their comeback and the guys can always have their opportunity to make good. But sometimes guys just go down the slippery slope. And, you know, he mentioned a couple of examples today with Tyron Woodley. Look at the slip that Tyron Woodley had. You know, this guy was a feared champion at 170. Also could just figure out the Rubik's Cube to go win, just win at all costs. And then it's just over. Like, one day he gets into the cage with a absolute beast in Kamaru Usman, and he just, you know, then he can't win a round. And now Tony, it sucks because his chance at all this type of stuff, the Khabib fight, it really got taken from him because of the pandemic. We never got the fight. It was cursed. And it's one of the great, I think, you know, people are going to go back and they're going to say, oh, well, clearly Khabib never, you know, he never could have gotten Khabib. I'm not going to subscribe to that just because he's now at 37 years old looking like a 37-year-old fighter. When this guy was at his absolute best, I truly believe that this guy could have given Khabib a run for his money. I really, really believe that. He just happened to be now. He's at an age now. I don't think that, obviously. I think he looks like a guy who's a little bit weathered, a little bit haggard. But it's crazy how quick it goes. And you think about, he had the Khabib fight. Then he had the Justin fight. Then the fight got canceled. He cut weight anyway for no reason. And maybe that took a lot out of him going to that Justin Gaethje fight. He got beat up badly. And now he had two fights against Charles Oliveira, which, look, it doesn't look like a knock to lose to Charles Oliveira. The guy's now champion of the world. And losing to a guy like Beneil Dariush, he looks like, you know, potentially a top five contender. But when you're talking about a guy that we thought was the uncrowned king, the guy who had the insane win streak, 12 wins in a row, beating all the monsters, just never, you know, had some poor luck of tripping over some cable wires or Khabib getting too fat or any of these types of things that went against him. And now it just feels so far, far away. And you think, like, some of the examples that he mentioned, Cowboy Cerrone, Tyron Woodley, Jacare, and you think, DC mentioned Tyron Woodley and Jacare, but you think about a guy like Cowboy Cerrone, like, just, you know, it wasn't that far ago where it was like Cowboy resurgence at 170, Papa Cowboy, and then all of a sudden it's just like, these guys who are the faces of the UFC, they don't even feel close anymore. You know, they feel like Tony doesn't feel close anymore. He feels like a guy at 37 years old who he's gone from contender to now seemingly gatekeeper. I don't know really where he goes from here. Like I mentioned, maybe he fights Michael Chandler and, you know, that's kind of a, hey, this is your one last ticket back in. But even for, I don't even know if Michael wants that because I don't even know what that means anymore. You just talk about a guy in Tony who hasn't won a round in a year and a half. And so what does it do for him? You know, does he, you know, does he go up to 170? Like, that's kind of like the last classic, hey, you know, maybe at 37 years old, the weight cut is too much. But, you know, he's getting ragdolled like this at 155. I'd hate to see what happens at 170 to him. And the other thing is, you know, this used to be a place where, you know, Tony on his back was so dangerous. Tony on his back was a place where guys didn't want to be there, you know, because he could slip something. And even then, he kind of just looked like a little bit of a fish out of water today. Like, he is usually a guy who thrives being uncomfortable. And, I mean, hell, look, he still got his knee twisted nearly off. And still fought around on it. So you got to give him credit for that, for toughness. And that's kind of where, with Beneil, you give him credit because he got a shutout win over an obvious dangerous guy in Tony Ferguson. And standing with Tony Ferguson, if you don't have to stand with Tony Ferguson, I get you. But everybody kind of went into this with like, oh, Beneil is striking, is amazing. This is going to be absolute fireworks. It's going to be fight of the night. And it really, like, Beneil wasn't going to have that. Like, he really went the safe route to go and beat Tony Ferguson. And look, credit to him. You know, he saw a blueprint, especially rolled out there by Charles Oliveira, to go and find a way to do that. But it wasn't the most, it definitely wasn't the most entertaining fight. That's for sure, for what everybody thought was going to be fight of the night. Edson Barboza versus Shane Burgos. Now, that was a fight of the night. That thing was absolutely crazy with the way those guys went at it. Edson Barboza knocked out Shane Burgos. And what could only be described as is, like, he hit him with this monster right hook. And it's like, you ever see, like, the scene of a movie where, like, the bad guy gets shot in the stomach but doesn't realize it? Like, he's in a standoff with, like, the good guy, right? And bang, bang, like some bullets go off, and like you kind of just see with the old guy, with the bad guy, like the eyes, you know, they'll do the classic shot of the guy looking into the camera, and then all of a sudden he'll realize, and then like then they'll pan down to the gut and it's bleeding, and he just gracefully goes down, he dies. That's kind of what it was when Shane Burgos got hit. It's like he got hit, and he's staring at Edson Barboza, and then all of a sudden it's just like, wilts back into the cage and it's over. And it was crazy. It was a crazy back and forth. You know, like Edson was hitting with some crazy kicks. He was doing the calf kick, split his shin open, so he was bleeding there. They were both taking some really, really hard shots. Shane Burgos was hitting him with some big body shots in the prior rounds. It was just a really, really good fight back and forth. Edson was unloading. He was bringing the wheel kicks out, hit him with a wheel kick to the face, hit him with a spinning back kick. You know, and Shane was just trying to weather the storm, bob and weave, hit him with the jab. It was, it was a really, really fun fight between those guys. Really, really fun. And then the way that it ended was just so nuts because, you know, you thought Shane, who was got this just iron will, took a shot and then was going to keep coming forward. And he just, I don't know, just the lights, like the lights flickered and then the lights went out. It was such as, I don't recall seeing a knockout reaction like that. It was so odd. And so Edson ended up getting the win. Good for him as far as that's concerned. That did end up, by the way, getting fight of the night, and this sucks for Tony, because Tony, this was his baby. They ended up boosting the bonuses to $75,000 apiece. So Edson and Shane each got $75,000 for their fights tonight. Charles Oliveira got $75,000 in it. Christos Giagos got $75,000 as well. So the whole purse was up from $200,000 bonus money to $300,000 bonus money. And it sucks for Tony that that's not coming his way. This one I got to mention from the feature prelims. There are a couple of things to mention. One, Lando Venata getting the win over Mike Grundy. one out of a 30-27 going Grundy's way. This was really a thing of the night where people were getting upset with the judges because I don't know how you have Venata losing every one of those rounds. I don't really know how you have him losing two rounds. And so Grundy getting a 30-27 his way was pretty atrocious. So people were talking about Texas the entire way through. There was some talk about this, about the Caitlin Chikaga card. I thought Caitlin had an argument for Viviani Arujo. Like, I thought that she was I definitely think that she was probably favored to win that 2-1. I thought that that's the way it was going to get read. But seeing as the fight was kind of turning in that second round, and then the third round was no doubt Chikagan's round, I don't have as big a problem with that as I do with the Vannata Grundy scorecard. But Vannata got the nods, thankfully. But it was it wasn't a great night for Texas judges. But yeah, the one that really has to be mentioned is Andre Muniz getting a win over Jacare. Broke his arm, like got him into an armbar submission and just snapped that thing. And it was pretty crazy because, like, we've talked so much about the sound of the crowd and being able to hear everything from a fighter. Look, this was a fully packed house in Houston. You know, people going crazy. Derek Lewis is there. Football players, everybody's there to go and watch the card. But you still could hear the snap in Jacare in his arm that Muniz put into him. And so it was pretty gruesome. It was pretty gruesome. Not only did you see the break, but you could hear the break. And it was really, really brutal from that standpoint, being able to hear something like that. But and not only, you know, to get a win like that over Jacare, but to do it like that in such a brutal, brutal fashion certainly said something from that regard and what these guys were able to do to each other. So overall, UFC 262 was a pretty average night. I didn't think it was a fantastic night of fights as far as like the whole. Now, mind you, they did lose Jack Hermanson, Edmund Shahbazi, and I was really looking forward to that card. That got kicked, punted to next week on the Rob Font, Cody Garbrandt card. So it didn't have its full arsenal with it, and I think some of the card was lagging, especially that Bonterine versus Schnell card. It was a good fight, but definitely not like one I was like, oh my god, I can't believe that this is on the pay per view. So it was like one of those things. It felt like Eric Spoelstra, like you lose Jimmy Butler for a game, and we're going to start Bialica instead of going to maybe a better fight, maybe putting Vannata onto the pay-per-view card. We have our two big cards here. And I think that, you know, losing a fight like that, and then you think, oh, well, for sure, Tony and Benil is going to be a great fight. And it wasn't. And so it probably ended up a little bit more lackluster, mostly because also, the guy who got the biggest pop of the night was for sure Tony Ferguson, and he had the most lackluster performance. So I think that probably killed a little bit of the buzz on this thing as well. We'll take a quick break, got to get into a little bit of box news, and we'll wrap things up on Tobin's Fight Show coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 Ticket. Thank you for tuning in. We've been recapping UFC 262. A couple of notes from the post game. I actually want to get into this. So this is interesting. So Dana White, he reaffirms Derek Lewis. He's going to be fighting Francis Ngannou for the heavyweight title. They still are on this standoff with John Bones Jones. Can't come to an agreement as far as salary is concerned there, which is a huge bummer. You know, I don't know if they're waiting for Vegas to open up and they could just make it a monster there, but I am just bummed out that they can't come to terms on that one, just because it's so obviously the biggest fight in UFC right now by a long shot. I really don't even think, I really think that if you, if in a weird world, in a weird universe where Dana White could put on John Jones versus Francis Ngannou and Conor McGregor versus whomever, even if it was against Khabib, I honestly, maybe Khabib's the one that'll trounce it, but just because of the bad blood. But I really think that even any Conor fight right now would get outsold by this fight. I just think it's a must make. But Instead, they're going to go with Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou. Can't say that I'm surprised. I know Francis wants to stay active as well. And who knows, you know, John has been doing this whole wanting to get his body to a perfect place. So no heavyweight title with them. Instead, it's going to be Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou, which is, in all honesty, I think is an interesting fight because the first fight sucked. Francis seemed to have some, like, PTSD from the Stipe fight. And so what Francis Ngannou, are we going to get the Francis Ngannou who's just been mauling everybody and now he gets in there with Derek Lewis and gets those paws on him and puts him out? You know, are we going to get the fight that we really hope? Like, look, if you tell me that these guys are going to fight again, am I still going to be excited? Of course. But we can't forget that it was one of the worst fights you'll ever see the last time. And so we all had that anticipation once before. I think the fact that there is a title on the line, this one, you figure that both gentlemen would be a little bit more geeked up for it. Dana also had an interesting thing about the guys from Triller not leaving him alone. And that brings me to an interesting story. There's apparently, according to Oscar De La Hoya, they've been trying to make GSP versus Oscar De La Hoya in a boxing match, the guys at Triller. And there were some talks of Oscar making this comeback with Triller. And that he was going to fight Eddie Alvarez. That was the name that we had heard. But then apparently, they've been trying to get GSP, and that the UFC wouldn't give the okay on it. And that this Triller guy, Ryan Kavanaugh, has been calling Dana nonstop. There's even the guy even claims that Dana White was trying to get Jake Paul some fights in the UFC, which that's kind of interesting. Which you did notice, Dana was being, I think, a little bit nicer to Jake Paul, or just saying, "Oh, the kid's making money. The kid's on a hot streak right now," and all that type of stuff. So, I found that pretty interesting that Triller and Dana White had the standoff. Now, I'm not surprised they didn't give the GSP okay, especially for an Oscar De La Hoya fight, because Dana White hates Oscar De La Hoya's guts. If it was maybe against anybody else, maybe Dana's a little bit more lenient. Seems a little bit weird that he would let Ben Askren go off and get his ass kicked by Jake Paul, but he won't let GSP go fight Oscar De La Hoya. That seems a little bit strange to me. But maybe he doesn't want to, you know, Triller's having success, and maybe he doesn't want to put another pay-per-view monster out there. So that's an interesting one. On the heels of that, Triller announced this week that George Kambosos Jr. versus Teofimo Lopez, this is kind of their dip into legitimate boxing. They have the lightweight championship of the world. It's taking place down here. But for the longest, we thought it was going to be on June 5th. And there's been a couple of developments. One, obviously, we know about the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather fight. Told you guys all about that last week where, you know, I was in the midst of the whole melee thing. So if you missed that, go back and listen to last week's podcast, and there's a whole description of what went on there. But it's a little bit weird that it was going to be on June 6th. They weren't going to put it on the same day, June 5th. They were going to put it on June 6th in the same city where this Triller title fight between George Kambosos Jr. and Teofimo Lopez, defending his belts, was going to go on. It was a little bit strange. And we got announced this week because we hadn't heard anything about tickets. We haven't heard anything about undercard, any of that type of stuff. Well, that got announced this week, and they actually have moved it to June 19th. I think this is smart on Triller's standpoint. I don't think that it's smart to compete on a couple of reasons. One, I don't really understand the whole point of having the fight down in Miami. There was talks beforehand, and we're actually going to talk to their head of boxing, Peter Kahn, this week on the morning show. I think he's coming on Wednesday. I think Peter's coming on. And, you know, Peter's a friend of mine and has been on this show a couple of times, but now he has this new position as the head of boxing on Triller. So I'm curious to see, you know, what went into the decision of not only wanting to move the fight, but when I heard him a little bit back, he said that this was going to be a closed setting, much like it was with Jake Paul, Ben Askren, and there wasn't going to be fans. Now fans are going to be able to go. And I think that's a smart thing to do. I think it's you have the great community there in Little Havana. It's a monster fight. You have two really, really entertaining fighters. I was talking with another friend of mine at the Floyd Mayweather thing about George, and people are saying, well, they don't know who this guy Kambosos is and all this type of stuff. I'm telling you, they need to get George out there and doing some talking and doing some talk shows, because George is charismatic, man. George is good on social media. George can sell a fight. I think it's important. I think they should get these guys in a lot of public settings to get that public beef brewing, because I think they can get a lot of hype behind their fights. I really, really do. But it is interesting, this whole UFC thriller dynamic that's kind of going on, because I think Dana was kind of like okay with it. Now the Jake Paul thing, is he at this point where he actually wants to work with Jake Paul? Does he want Jake Paul to come in and do boxing? Does he want Jake Paul to get his ass kicked by a UFC guy? Jake Paul put it on blast, so I'm kind of curious to see where this all goes and how much legitimacy there is to it. But getting back to the Camboses and TFM, I think it's smart for those guys too, because it sucks for them that they had the date first and that Floyd and Logan kind of just went and took it all over. But you know what it's going to be, especially when that footage runs. I think that they maybe could have got away with it if the whole Jake Paul brawl doesn't happen, because you're like, it's a fake fight. There's no hot. Now there's obvious heat behind it. They're going to play that clip a million times. You just got snuffed out. So not only do you put it a couple weeks back, you don't put it on a competing weekend. And now even, you know, some fans can come to the building. So I think tickets go on sale for that on the 20th this week. So you guys can be on the lookout for that to see when that's all going down. But pretty exciting stuff that's we're getting another we're getting a championship fight down here. Been the best part of the pandemic for sure is that we've been getting a lot more action down here. Speaking of local, check out next week. You got on Bellator, Valerie Laredo. She's going to be fighting on the prelims. So Miami Zone's going to be on some action on Showtime. I don't know. You know, it might be on the YouTube page if it's a prelim fight. Cyborg's on the main card, and you got Austin Vanderford, Paige Van Zandt's husband. He's going to be on the card as well. So let's go about Bellator next week. Is some local talk. I saw Danny Sabatello, who trains at American Top Team. He just announced on his Instagram that he signed with Bellator, and I think he's on the prelims as well. So a lot of local ties coming up next week on Bellator if you want to check that out. And then one other cool local story I saw this week, that Tyson Fury's been down here. He's been in Miami with training with his brother over at Warriors Boxing Gym, which is a nice little facility that they're building over there. Because it's, you know, the last time I was there, they were still building it out, as my guy Jesse Robinson was showing me. But I saw there was some footage of Nick Diaz was moving around with Tyson Fury. So that was kind of cool. We saw Nick and Tyson Fury doing some move around. Still don't have a fight with Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury. It seemed like we were going to get something official this week, but it's going to be in Saudi Arabia apparently sometime in August, but nothing is finalized as of yet. So I don't know, man. We'll keep you posted on that one and see what's what. But that's our show for this week, everybody. Hope you enjoy the fights, and we'll talk to you next week. See you.